This time with the calf in the open countryside is the only time the boy could release the sexual, romantic, erotic, and biologically urgent sensations that are being squeezed out of him at the yeshiva, physically through its poor conditions, intellectually through its punitive teaching, and humanly by stunting his natural, instinctive, healthful growth.
Welcome to The Stories Jews Tell, a weekly podcast with Professor Ruth Weiss, brought to you by the Tikva Fund. This week, we'll be reading The Calf by Mendele Moichers Forum. This season of The Stories Jews Tell is sponsored by Robert L. Friedman.
I first came across this week's story, The Calf, by Mendele Moichers Forum, in the abridged translation by Jacob Sloan, the translation that we're using here. When I then turned to the original Yiddish, I found it much longer and more complex in some of the ways that I'll try to describe. But before approaching the work, I think we should briefly consider the author, who's himself a literary creation. In 1864, in the now Ukrainian part of then Tsarist Russia, 29-year-old Sholem Abramovich turned from Hebrew to Yiddish as his main language of composition. He was one of a group of Jewish enlighteners or maskilim determined to reform Jewish life, and until then he was best known for his Hebrew essays on education. Explaining the shift from the higher status Hebrew to the vernacular, he said that he began writing in Yiddish because he'd asked himself, "For whom do I labor?" And he realized that he could not introduce the reforms that he thought necessary by writing in Hebrew for a limited intellectual circle. Yiddish was the spoken language of millions of Jews of Eastern Europe, and the first Yiddish newspapers and publications were then looking for suitable material for a very fast-growing readership of men and women. Abramovich saw a creative opportunity that could also serve his national educational purpose. For this new venture of popular fiction, Abramovich invented the figure of a book peddler named Mendele to be the ostensible author of his stories, and Mendele the book peddler, Mendele Moichers Forum, quickly subsumed the identity of his creator. Abramovich was heard from no more. This new stand-in became so popular that his creator continued writing as Mendele even after he returned to writing in Hebrew in the 1880s. Mendele was eventually hailed as the pioneering genius of two modern literatures, Yiddish and Hebrew. This unparalleled feat in the history of literature was made possible by the simultaneous renaissance of Jewish literature in both Hebrew and Yiddish in the latter part of the 19th century. Sholem Aleichem called Mendele the grandfather, the Zayde of Yiddish literature, while Chaim Nachman Bialik, one of the finest of the younger Hebrew writers, credited Mendele with establishing the nusach, the characteristic style of Hebrew prose. When the ideological struggle between the two languages later heated up and some of the Hebrew writers tried to pry him away from Yiddish, Abramovich said that writing in both languages was like breathing out of both nostrils. He resisted the factionalism in the younger generation until his death in Odessa in 1917. Now, education and the proper development of the child was one of Mendele's concerns from his earliest writing to the end of his life, and that lifelong struggle is the subject of today's story. The adult narrator tells us about his own traumatic upbringing, and there are enough similarities between this story and Abramovich's biography to suggest that he was drawing on personal experience. After the death of Sholem's father when he was barely bar mitzvah, his mother had married a village miller who was too poor to support the many children in the merged family, so that Sholem, who's already known for his intelligence, was sent off to yeshiva. The Calf is fiction, but its situation in many ways resembles that of the author. Here's how it begins. Shortly after the heroine of this story was born, something happened to her mother that caused a tremendous stir in our village. The adult narrator starts with the happiest moment of his childhood, the birth of the calf, whom he calls the heroine of this story, brings the boy a delirium of joy. His mother keeps a milking cow, and there's no father in the picture. That animal provides her income. The boy sees only that he has a marvelous new playmate, and he wants to frolic with that calf all day long. This gets him into trouble both at home and with the teacher at Cheder, his Jewish school. The Talmud lay open before me, but all I could see was the calf, small chin, tiny perked up ears, delicate neck. The teacher droned on, and I heard the cow mooing to her calf. His love for the calf grows daily, together with the sufferings that it brings him. Meanwhile, conditions in the village that winter are so difficult, and the cow receives so little nourishment that, not surprisingly, it dies soon after giving birth, which is a calamity for the household, but a boon for the child. It is decided that rather than slaughter the animal as intended, the calf should now be raised in the cow's stead, and the boy is put in charge of its care. Because his mother needs his help with the calf, and he has anyway outgrown his cheder teacher, the boy has the time of his life in the fields with this playmate all day long. "If not for me, you'd be languishing in your stall," the boy tells the calf. "And if not for you, I'd be languishing in the house of study." They are both transformed that first summer. The calf and the boy grow healthy and strong. This is considered proper in the calf, but not in him. "You've lost all your Jewish refinement," complains his mother, as she sends him off to yeshiva in the fall. And there he suffers miserably, until he wins a reprieve and is allowed to return home for a holiday break. As the rest of the story tracks the parallel development of the calf and the boy, this visit home captures the difference between the natural growth of the one and the repressed life of the other. The calf is being courted by its male counterparts, while a pair of matchmakers come bidding for the boy whose good head makes him a desirable son-in-law. They approach the mother, quote, "with appraising gestures and furrowed brows, like merchants haggling over a piece of cloth," end of quote. When the time comes, he will be married off to the highest bidder. But meanwhile, the mother is too poor to keep the boy, so back to the yeshiva he goes. Poverty is the underlying condition. Punitive education at the yeshiva further impoverishes his mind and spirit. The denouement, or resolution of the story, begins with the letter the boy receives from his mother telling him the good news that his calf, now a cow, has given birth to a calf that brought them a good price at slaughter. And thanks to his role in having raised that cow, mother sends him a couple of gold coins and a piece of the calf's broiled liver. She is as insensitive to her son as she is to her animals. But this cow, the one whom he once raised, cannot recover from the removal of her calf. She will give no milk and wastes away. Our yeshiva student does likewise, sinking into a breakdown that leads to madness. On the day he is taken to the hospital, a letter arrives from his mother, mourning the loss of her livelihood and telling him that he must now stay in the yeshiva because she has lost her last means of support. The story ends with her words in Yiddish, "Gepegicht die Beheme," in English, "the cow, your calf, has died." Well, I don't usually linger on the difference between the original versions of the works that we read and their translations, but I will make an exception here because in Mendel's writing, the narrator counts for much more than the tale. The original story begins with a riff on its Yiddish title, Das Tosfos Yontif Kelbel, or the Tosfot Yontif Calf, which would have been almost as incomprehensible to the Yiddish reader as it is to us. Rabbi Yontif Lipman Heller was a 17th century rabbi in Prague and Poland, best known for his commentary on the Mishnah, entitled the Tosfos Yontif. Literally, holiday addenda, the standard rabbinic term for medieval scholarly annotations to the Talmud, Mendel was playing here on the learned author's given name, Since rabbinic scholars were traditionally known by the title of their works, the educated reader would have known that this referred, in Yiddish pronunciation, to him, to the Tosfos Yontif. But how, asks our narrator, did this name of the scholar accrue to the calf? Surely the calf could not have been studying the Mishnah, though the Torah does say that in the land of Israel, every animal and bird will grow wise, and a Jewish donkey can be as smart as Pinchas ben Yair's. In our poor corner of the world, animals are just animals, and calves are left to run free. How then did the calf come by its learned name? With that comic preamble, Mendela launches into his story, assuming that the reader had caught the reference to the Talmudic legend about the donkey stolen from Pinchas ben Yair that was released after it refused to eat food that had not been tithed. We needn't concern ourselves with what we are missing, except to realize that Mendela writes as someone who shares with his readers millennia of common history, centuries of common culture, and a sense of humor based on the contrast between past glory and the debased Jewish reality that he's about to describe. Our storyteller writes as a member in good standing of the society that he is skewering and that has a tradition of conflating human beings with animals. Since none of this opening humor is available to the English reader, our translator omits the preamble and begins with the mother cow, a well-bred creature whose main virtue was the ability to subsist on very little. The style is a little less intimate, but you can't miss the ironies. Our cow was simply not the glutton that Gentile beasts are. Through sincere piety, she gradually broke herself of the habit of feeding and would accept anything at all as food. To paraphrase the saying about the woman of valor, many were the Jewish beasts that did valiantly, but she surpassed them all. When the former owner of the cow had sold her to my mother, he proclaimed the beast to be overflowing with milk. Now, this turned out to be not quite true, but it would be doing the cow a great injustice to blame her. In the first place, she was not guilty of withholding what she had, since she had nothing. And secondly, she received, as far as feed went, much less than her legitimate due. Besides, such mutual deceptions are common among Jews, deceptions based not so much on what is actually said as on what is imagined or predicted. This state of self-delusion being so widespread, all sales among Jews must be final. Now, despite these blemishes, the cow does her duty, including giving birth to a calf. Not robust to begin with, she is housed after giving birth in a filthy, drafty shed, and one freezing night, as we have said, she dies. The boy's mother is devastated, but then immediately grasps why it had to happen. She says, "Listen, everyone, this is God's handiwork. I realize it now. This beast has died as an atonement for us. She has taken our sins upon her. For there's a curious tradition in our distinguished family. My saintly forefather commanded his children and their children to commemorate the second day of the new moon of the month of Adar with a special feast, a special Purim, in remembrance of a miraculous escape from death once granted him on that date. He pronounced a curse on any descendant who neglected this duty. Well, yesterday was that day, and I forgot to celebrate it. This beast, I tell you, is our atonement. Why else should a cow die so soon after having calved?" This saintly forebear is, of course, the Tosfos Yontif, and the most learned of the women who have gathered to mourn this tragic loss declares that the calf must now be spared from slaughter and henceforth serve as the living reminder never again to forget that sacred day. And that concludes the explanation of the calf's name. That's why it was called the Tosfos Yontif calf, translated simply as the Purim calf. The adult telling this story is critical of the society as only someone can be who has suffered at its hands, someone who feels that it is dangerous to itself and to its children, and therefore warns against its worst tendencies. The people who attach a dead rabbi's name to the calf ignore the material conditions of life that explain why things happen as they do. Instead, they substitute a quasi-religious explanation, a superstition, that prevents them from seeking any improvement. We are given all the information necessary to recognize that the real sin, if you want to think in those terms, was neglect of the creature that had just given birth. The calf's incongruous name signals the danger. Better consult the laws of nature. Today, we might say, follow the science. Aligned with this respect for material reality is protest against the commercial utilitarian treatment of animals. The anthropomorphic description of the cow and the calf, who so closely resemble the Jewish mother and son in the story, awakens real sympathy for the creatures. Now, Mendeler was a member of the SPCA of his time and a naturalist of the highest order. He wrote much about the humane treatment of animals, but this story aims at something even larger. It never occurred to me, writes the author, that something might be amiss with the order of things, that the wisdom which had come down from time immemorial might be folly, philosophy, mere sophistry, conventional piety, unfeeling and cruel. So I was unhappy with my unhappiness, regarding it as the work of the evil spirit, the Yetzer Hara. I remembered how our teacher had once explained the biblical passage, "Go not after your own heart," as meaning that a boy should not allow himself strong desires. So at stake in understanding animals is appreciation of nature itself. What evolves naturally among some of God's creatures is thwarted and deformed among the Jews. Cows and calves breed in a wholesome cycle of sex and procreation. But where is the analogous sexual awakening in the child? A Jewish boy is sent to cheder instead of outdoors and taught that his natural desires are evil. The contrast comes to a head during the vacation when he is briefly allowed to return home. It's described like this. "I saw my calf, and she had grown in my absence. Her udders were firm, and she was being courted. A pair of bucks escorted her to the edge of the garden behind our house, wooing her on the way, showing her how delightfully they could lick her, and leaping on her back. With all proper deference to the suitors, I drove them off with a stick and stationed myself in front of the prospective bride. 'Hello there,' I said, and tried to stroke her neck. But she turned her head away and lifted her small pointed horns like threatening spears, as though to say, 'Hands off, who are you to stroke me, fellow?'" During this delightful vacation, the boy's attempts to reclaim his calf's affection is described as a competitive courtship. In a shy language of seduction, the boy sometimes uses phrases from Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs, the Bible's consummate love story that is traditionally interpreted allegorically as the attachment of God to the Jewish people. The boundaries between the real and the implied are so permeable that we know the adult narrator is describing his experience of puberty. This time with the calf in the open countryside is the only time the boy could release the sexual, romantic, erotic, and biologically urgent sensations that are being squeezed out of him at the yeshiva, physically through its poor conditions, intellectually through its punitive teaching, and humanly by stunting his natural, instinctive, healthful growth. Shir HaShirim reminds us the Jews were not always artificially at odds with nature. The tragedy of calf and boy are the result not of Judaism, but of its misapplication. Now, Jews entering modernity were not the only ones protesting the repression of natural human development. William Wordsworth in England saw the child trailing clouds of glory until shades of the prison house begin to close upon the growing boy. The more one appreciated childhood as primal glory or uninhibited freedom, the more one came to realize that civilization required the sacrifice of childhood. Mendeler writes as a product of the intellectualized Jewish society that had produced this culture of self-restraint. That accounts for both the bitterness of his criticism and for the delicacy of his treatment of thwarted sexual awakening. The Mendelin narrator is confident that the story he is telling will help the Jews shed the worst of their tendencies, but only through humor and irony, because the conundrum of Jewish civilization cannot be resolved. Nor can the Jewish mother be blamed for her poverty and pain. The objects of this satire were themselves victims of more than they had it in their power to correct. When Mendele writes that his Jewish cow did penance for being in exile, he himself, no less than the mother in the story, is part of that exile and butt of that joke. When the first Hebrew educators in Palestine established their first modern Jewish schools, Mendele figured prominently in their curriculum. They may have appreciated his satire all the more, knowing that they had avoided its perils. After the First World War had devastated a huge part of Mendele's world, some of those teachers found it too harsh to teach a critical work about a world that was no more. And, of course, after the Shoah, they found it impossible. Mendele inspires no nostalgia, but we read this as a literary document of the Jewish Enlightenment, part of how we became modern. If we want to know how Jews transformed themselves and continue to do so, he is the model. His are the voice, the mind, and the soul that we cherish. And the much improved conditions of our lives don't change the irresolvable tension between freedom and obligation, between nature and civilization. So I think this remains a great story, and maybe especially for adolescents. Well, that's it for this week. Our story next week will be another story of a young man's awakening of a different kind, a story by Isaac Babel, The Story of My Dovecot. In the meantime, I wish you happy reading.